So, welcome to this podcast. Analytics and big data are two phrases that we frequently hear. Yet, how do they represent opportunities for the finance and accountancy professionals? What do they need to know, and what skills do they need to master? This is the subject of an ACCA and Chartered Accountants Australia New Zealand report, Analytics in Finance and Accountancy. And with me here are my fellow authors to discuss the highlights of the report. My name is Clive Webb, and I'm Senior Insights Manager at ACCA, and I'm joined by Charlotte Evett, a New Zealand Government and Pacific Relations Leader at CANZ, and Suresh Sood, a Data Scientist with CANZ. So welcome both of you.
Thanks, Clive.
Thank you, Clive. It's great to be here.
So Charlotte, if I can start with you, why are analytics relevant to finance and accountancy teams?
Hi, Clive. And first of all, thanks so much for having me on the podcast today. Why are analytics relevant to finance and accountancy teams? That's a great question. And I think the answer in short is because they enable us to use the wealth of data that we have at our fingertips to truly partner with the business and advise outcomes and actions. And I think also to truly inform data-driven decisions. But I think it's really important to clarify, and as we've pointed out in the report, not all analytics are created equal, if you like. So we outlined in the report four different types of analytics. So descriptive, diagnostic, predictive, and prescriptive, with the first two, descriptive and diagnostic, looking to the past, so what has happened. So that's the traditional role of finance, really, our traditional reporting. And then predictive and prescriptive, which look to what's likely to happen in the future. They use the past data, but they build on it to recommend what's likely to happen in the future and to recommend perhaps possible courses of action. So I think finance teams have long used the descriptive and diagnostic analytics to do our standard reporting. So we're all really familiar with that. They help us to be more efficient. But the more forward-looking analytics really use the past to look into the future. And this is relevant to the finance and accountancy function because they really help to drive improved data-backed decision-making, which helps us to be really relevant to the business.
And I think that the point you made there, Charlotte, about that data-driven decision making, the need for finance teams to provide insight, and really the story of the pandemic that I hear from a lot of finance teams is it is that forward-looking insight, that scenario modeling, and those organizations that have gone on top of that as the analytics agenda, really those that have succeeded and or rather had less issues.
Absolutely. I think the first two types of analytics that I mentioned, descriptive and diagnostic, so that you're taking patterns from the past, but we can't really look back at what happened this time last year anymore in the COVID situation as an accurate predictor for what will happen in the future. So that's right. Those that have got on top of predictive and prescriptive are really come out a lot better and will continue to do so because things are just so unpredictable. So they're pulling in other kinds of data as well. Clive, I think it's important to point out here. So they're not just pulling in the traditional financial metrics and data that we've had in the past, but they're really having to sort of go further afield and use what we refer to as unstructured data. So, maybe scraping in data from websites and, social media and other places, that more unstructured data to look at customer sentiment, perhaps to help them predict what's happening in the future more accurately.
And maybe that takes us nicely to Suresh and the question around analytics really needs to be supported by a data strategy that in turn, in essence, aligns the business strategy. And that's a point I think we make fairly strongly in the report. How fundamental is that to analytics?
Yes, thanks for that question, Clive. Look, I think the data strategy and I tried to step through this almost as if I was sitting writing the data strategy with essentially the research report we've come up with. And there are a lot of points that arise that help inform our development of strategy. But I think first and foremost, and leveraging from and building on what Charlotte said, the move to prescriptive predictive The data strategy is probably the only document or plan that can help transition us from the traditional today's world of making decisions based on hindsight to actually making decisions with foresight. So this is really taking that forward look. And so I think the data strategy documentation, whether it be a one pager or a full blown strategy, becomes that very important document that helps take us forward. And that's what we're also hearing from a number of people that we spoke to across the world. They're looking for a means of capturing somewhat the ad hoc moves that they're making, and that's where the data strategy will help. And the data strategy will also actually include and act as a placeholder, for instance, for our training plans, for essentially, and it's no matter the size of the organization. So the UK government on the 9th of September is reinvigorating a data strategy. So the size of the organization, small or large, all need a data strategy. We have to ensure it aligns with the business strategy. It basically captures the operational, non-financial data that will also help us enable and inspire the innovation that's taking place in the business. It's about collecting, sharing, and managing. And we heard this time and time again from many people across the globe, again, having some form of mud map in terms of how we share and ensure the company strategy execution takes place. And I think very importantly, I would also be capturing areas where we can make better, faster, cheaper decision-making, which is a key output from this research report. We found that people were endeavoring to get their mind around what will they do with the analytics, and that essentially is better, faster, cheaper decision-making. And I hope we can also add something in data strategy on the competitive advantage. But of course, it must start with the business strategy. So I think I've given you a lot of food for thought there, Clive, for you and your listeners. But I hope through that, there's no one size fits all. But hopefully I've provided some aspects from our report that help navigate someone contemplating a data strategy.
And I think one of the key points you mentioned in that, Suresh, was the fact that this doesn't just apply to larger businesses, and the smaller businesses, particularly those that are on cloud-based systems at their core, really should be having their own data strategy, because analytics applies and is an opportunity for all sizes of business. Is that fair, both of you?
Well, yeah, certainly from my perspective and from what we've heard, there is a bit of a bifurcation, though. The smaller businesses, I think, have access to a more attractive range of applications that can help make their data strategy real in a shorter period of time. And I genuinely believe that from what a number of the consultants have told us and advisors to smaller businesses. But it'd be good to get Charlotte's view on government and some of the things happening in her part of the world as well, I think, on this.
Well, thanks, Suresh, for that. And I agree with you. These tools are open to all, you know, businesses of all shapes and sizes. Absolutely. In terms of government, we, as in part of preparing the paper, we had we spoke to an organisation in New Zealand, which is part of the government here, which actually uses data, and they sort of triangulate it. So they use data analytics, they use research, and then they use actual experiences, so interviews face to face with people, and they triangulate that to make sure that the government money spent is done the most effective way that they possibly can so that they get absolutely fantastic outcomes there. So that was a really exciting use case, I think, in how data analytics can be used for social good, which was an exciting use case.
And talking about those use cases and maybe building a bit into the business case, I remember one of the interviews that Suresh and I did with a lady who was stuck in a very traditional legacy system and wasn't able to move the business forwards to understand the power of analytics and really developing that business case. And some of the things we've talked about insight, about scenario modeling, is absolutely fundamental. I wonder, Suresh, if you've got any sort of key thoughts about the business case for analytics in finance and accountancy.
Yeah, look, I think these thoughts are pretty much based on the fact that the finance function, from what we're hearing, obviously and clearly know how to put a business case together. So the finance function actually has been well positioned and is well positioned to actually help support other parts of the business in building this business case. And that's what we really heard. We heard really there is a traditional business case that goes along, and that's pro forma, but analytics projects that actually enhance decision making do actually appear to get put at the top of the pile. And again, we heard this time and time again. Sometimes it was, there's a shortcut. It didn't mean there's a shortcut to doing the hard yards of the business case. It just meant that you would get sent to the top of the pile because the C-level suite understands the nature of the business case. But apart from that, we actually did document in detail within the research report a number of points that we heard across the globe in putting the business case together. So I think in the time that we've got, the most important is really contextualize the decision-making impacts for the business case, and that should help take your project or essentially forward. So, oh, and apology, there's one other aspect. Analytics, when we keep on hearing about it, can mean the tool or it can be the technique we use to solve a problem. So I think we need to be clear in our business case which it is, if not both. So apologies for that interruption, Clive, but I just wanted to squeeze that in.
No, that's a good point, and we'll come back to skills I think in a moment or two. Sorry, Charlotte.
Sorry, and I was just going to add to what Suresh quite rightly pointed out. At the end of the day, as he mentioned earlier, I mean, the business case, apart from dollars and cents, is that at the end of the day, these tools are likely to drive better, faster, cheaper decision making. So as well as the dollars and cents, there are some things that can't be quantified, but important too.
So if we look forward, say 18, 36 months into the future, and for the readers of the report and the listeners to this podcast, how do you think they should look or measure success in the use of analytics going forwards? Maybe Suresh, you want to start with that one?
Yeah, look, I think it's twofold. One is hard metrics. So what I would start to do today, right now almost, and there is really no evidence this is being done in a systematic fashion, but I would be capturing the number of projects and business cases that relate to the decision making. And I would also keep note of which ones are hindsight, which ones relate to foresight. So in 36 months, say, I would think that number would increase and could well be double digit. The other aspect is essentially cataloging of new data sources. I think that is just so important that over a similar time frame, we track catalog data sources. And the softer area beyond metrics is, are we now more forward-looking as a team, as an organization? And evidence for that may well be that we tend to become more proactive. Certain activities take less time. And again, we can ascribe metrics, but I think there's nothing wrong with having a softer measure of proactivity. So I think those are the key areas that I really wanted to raise when we're looking backwards.
If I can add one more to that and build on that softer piece, sure. Suresh, that the view that the finance team is really becoming a trusted business partner that is actually acting across the organization and very much involved in strategic decision making, I think that adds the next step, doesn't it? Because as Charlotte was talking about, as we get more forward looking, it becomes more supporting decision making going forward using those analytical tools and using those skill sets.
Yep.
Clive, we heard throughout our interviews mentioned so many times, that finance, you've succeeded when finance actually has a seat at the table in terms of, as opposed to that sort of more traditional role of just, like I mentioned earlier, reporting on what has been and what has been done with the financial statements. We actually have a seat at the table of decision making and help to drive those strategic and operational decisions because we are the guardians of the financial data and the finance team. So we have all of that at our fingertips to begin with. So we're in the right place to sort of begin.
And I think we did talk about in the report about how that guardianship of the data really expands into data that assist decision making rather than just purely concentrating on that financial lens, because as you said earlier on, Charlotte, that unstructured data is as important in that decision making process as the structured as traditional financial data.
Absolutely, and in some cases, more important because, like I mentioned, with the COVID situation, the numbers of yesterday aren't really an indicator of, the sentiment out there for tomorrow because everything's changing so rapidly.
So maybe that takes us, Charlotte, nicely to the skills. And in the report, we talk about a number of areas of skills that people need to develop. What's your view on those?
Well, my personal view, Clive, which is one shared by most of, not all of the people we interviewed as part of research for the paper, is that absolutely the skills needed are a combination of technical and, I guess, more behavioural or the soft skills that we refer to. So we, of course, have our traditional suite of skills as a finance and accountancy professionals that we learn in part of our training, those core technical skills. Also, there's obviously a need to be familiar with a range of tools and techniques around data, so the extraction and manipulation and presentation of data as well. So I guess they're your technical skills, although many of the people we interviewed highlighted that if they get an accounting or finance professional in and they don't have those data skills, but if they have the right attitude, for example, one of the people we interviewed said he has a maths problem that he uses. So he'll get in what looks like a really great a finance or accounting candidate, and they have really great business knowledge. So he's determined that, and that's a tick. And what he'll then do is he'll give them a left field maths problem just to see if they can think in a different sort of creative and challenging manner. And if they tick off those, they've got the technical skills in one part that he needs, they have that agile and creative way of thinking, and they're happy to challenge things, then he can teach them the data skills so they can learn that data part. So I guess your technical skills, and then some, if you've got a core part of them, you can learn the other part on the job or through courses or whatever, but also personal skills are really important. So like I mentioned, being able to think creatively and to think left field, be agile, a bit of an overused word, but it's very, very important, being able to think creatively. I think an essential thing is being able to build relationships because, again, it might not be finance that are the guardians of all the analytics tools. It may very well be IT. So if you're not able to form a really strong relationship with your colleagues in IT and also with your partners across the business, then you're not going to be successful in this area as well. And also, I guess, personal skills such as the ability to really communicate effectively. So being able to take the data and the insights that the analytic tools give you and really being able to tell the story to the business.
And that range of analytics. Sorry, go on, Trish.
I was going to say in that interview, actually, Charlotte and the informant actually discussed the unicorn, and I found that quite amusing. So do you want to recount that, Charlotte? I was just... I've seen the talent area. Yeah.
And it's actually, I've heard it said before, so it actually wasn't my phrase, Suresh, but it is the unicorn is the that person that doesn't exist or a very, very rare. I've never seen a unicorn myself, but you know, that person with the full suite of accountancy technical skills, the really solid understanding of the business and business skills, and then that full sort of data analytics or that data scientist set of skills, as well as all the personal skills. And I think that person just doesn't exist. So increasingly employers are becoming aware of this, and they're taking their really good people that have part of that skill set, be they, you know, engineers or data scientists or whatever, and that they're helping them get the other side of the technical skills, as long as they have those really important personal skills. So, you know, they're willing to challenge, think left field, think creatively, and they're able to build relationships, because they're things that are harder to teach. So, yep, the unicorn that has the full suite of skills that everyone desires doesn't exist. So take your great people and really train them up to be who, you know, to be the unicorn.
And I think that's a good thought to leave us on, Charlotte. So thank you very much indeed for that. There's a lot more detail in the report, and what Charlotte and Suresh and I have done, I hope, is given you a taster for the report and encourage you to go and find it. Thank you very much to Charlotte and Suresh for their thoughts, and we hope that you found this session useful. If you want to read the full report or access any of the abstracts of it, then please visit either the ACCA or CANZ websites or download the ACCA Professional Insights app. But my thank you to all of you for listening, and goodbye.